Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we have another amazing jam-packed episode of The New World Next Week for you, which, of course, you can find everything you need, all the sources cited, all the stories, all the videos, audio, so very much more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, you and I kind of joked about maybe doing a whole episode about video games, but we listen to the better part of ourselves, and we'll just do it for the first story this week. James, as the new Xbox One is a twisted nightmare. Almost a week after the technology giant lifted the lid on Xbox One, the company has come under fire for twisted features that could potentially gather personal data to be sold to the highest bidder. The new device, which is expected to launch before Christmas 2013, includes a Kinect motion camera that is able to track movement. Voice commands, such as Xbox On, can be used to control the console, suggesting the camera and microphone are constantly in standby mode. Tim Vines, director of Civil Liberties Australia, told GameFix that Microsoft has a lot to answer for with a product that has the ability to listen and watch everything a person does. Quote, people should have the ability to turn off the camera or microphone, even if it limits the functionality of the machine, he said. Vines believes privacy is all about control. Of course, if Microsoft doesn't allow that control, then people should vote with their wallets and skip the Xbox. Microsoft's new Xbox meets the definition of a surveillance device under some Australian laws, so they need to be upfront and tell customers whether anyone else can intercept their information or remotely access their device, Vine says. This sentiment is being felt all around the world, with Berlin's Federal Data Protection Commissioner Peter Scharr telling Spiegel Online that Xbox One is nothing more than a monitoring device under the guise of a gaming console, saying, quote, the Xbox One continuously records all sorts of personal information about me, my reaction rates, my learning or emotional states. These are then processed on an external server and possibly even passed on to third parties. Scharr believes this is a major breach of privacy, saying in closing, James, the fact that Microsoft could potentially spy on my living room is merely a twisted nightmare. James, you and I believe we did report on the Kinect, which is essentially, again, another version of this, spying on you in your living room, listening to everything you do and taking that data so they can sell it back to you Minority Report style, right, James?
Unfortunately, that's exactly correct, and I don't think anyone can plead surprise at a development like this. This is exactly what we've been talking about and what we would expect from the world of ubiquitous computing that we're moving into, in which everything that we use, everything that we have in our home is going to be a little spy device that'll be reporting our details back to the companies that manufactured them for whatever purposes they want to put them to. And unfortunately, in comment threads on these types of discussions, more and more I'm seeing people saying, oh, who cares? What does it matter if my Xbox is watching me play a video game? It just doesn't matter. So really, I mean, we have already, I think, crossed the threshold of, unfortunately, what Mark Zuckerberg was actually right about saying recently, is that the concept of privacy is completely changed, that people don't think of privacy in the same way anymore. And perhaps that's a word that we can consign to the dustbin of history at the rate things are going. Perhaps the newspeak language won't even contain a word for privacy, because it will be such a foreign concept. I truly hope that people will vote with their dollars and skip the Xbox, this spy device in all but name. But for those who don't and must get some sort of video game fix from Microsoft, at the very least, I would hope that you would understand that it is spying on everything you say and everything you do, and that if you don't take appropriate measures to make sure that it is locked away in a place where it can't see or hear you, it will be recording what you're doing. It will be dialing back to the mothership, and that information will be being recorded and stored and data mined and traced and logged with not only Microsoft, but of course with all the government agencies and intelligence services that Microsoft is backdoored into. So it's just a spy device, that's all it is. And personally, I stay away from video games generally, but even if I didn't, I think I'd be giving a big pass to this particular console.
Absolutely. I'm always really thankful I kicked the video game demon back in the old 8-bit Nintendo days. James, a couple of other related notes on our video game first segment of this New World Next Week episode. Pentagon Project makes cyber war as easy as Angry Birds, and that is from the Danger Room blog on Wired. And lastly, Simulator lets players choose sides in Global Uprising. James, have you ever wanted to take to the streets in protest for an important cause? Or perhaps join the security services to try and restore peace? Soon, you'll be able to do both with a new video game simply called Riot. More on that from Russia Today. And that transitions us, I think, quite well into our second story this week, as so many of our stories in this segment actually come from the fantastic StratRisks.com and our good friend Michael Vale. German Finance Minister Schäuble warns of revolution. German Finance Minister Schäuble warned on Tuesday, May 28, that unless Europe wins the battle against youth unemployment, revolution is a distinct possibility. The dreaded R-word came about as some corners pushed to reform the welfare standards to closely correlate with American standards. This would be a monumental mistake, according to the German finance minister. Youth unemployment as it stands now across the EU is at 25%, double the rate of older citizens. EU countries such as Germany, Italy, and France are backing urgent action to tackle the issue before it even becomes even more systemic than it already is. Anecdotes out of Spain have college graduates turning 30 without ever having a job, and the problem is definitely having a social spillover, as evidenced by the riots in Stockholm. Schäuble told a conference that if U.S. welfare standards were enacted in the EU, the revolution would start the same day. And James, I will include a whole list of other geopolitical notes that I think kind of reinforce what we're talking about here in the EU.
Well, revolution, obviously, is on the tip of everyone's tongues and the forefront of everyone's minds these days, especially with the economic chaos that's happening not only here in Japan, not only there in the United States, but of course also in the EU. And one would only have to wonder what's taking the citizens of the EU-SSR so long to rise up against their would-be political overlords there at the European Central Bank, where this is really being formalized and brought together, especially because, I mean, as Kennedy warned, those who make political action impossible make political revolution necessary, or something to that effect. This is exactly what the case is in Europe, where, again, the citizens have been denied time and time and time again the ability to make any sort of decision on whether they actually even want to be part of the European Union. And as the EU, or the Eurozone, I should say, enters its sixth straight quarter of recession, as youth unemployment continues to skyrocket, as politicians continue to demand the citizens of the EU to tighten their belts and take haircuts and participate in bail-ins for the benefit of the banking elite in Europe at the expense of everyone else, what possible incentive do the youth in Europe have for going along with this system and participating in it? There is no ray of sunshine on the horizon for them, and the only thing that the European Central Bank and the European Union has up their belt is more quantitative easing in Federal Reserve style. So we've seen people talking about whether or not Draghi is going to unleash some direct monetization through bond buying from the ECB in the coming weeks or months, because Spain is spiraling out of control and at this point is looking even worse than Greece. So things continue to deteriorate. There's no hope whatsoever that there's going to be some political solution to this, and all they're going to offer is increasing European Union centralized control, which benefits, of course, no one but the very few in Brussels and the politically connected and the banksters who own them all. So I think there has to be some sort of fundamental change in the system. And as we've talked about time and time again, I don't think that carrying pitchforks to Brussels is exactly going to do it. I think people have to start really, truly creating the alternative economy that will be the only thing that will survive this coming collapse, except for the controlled cashless society control grid that they want to slot into place. And of course, there's many, 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 many different ways to do that, whether it's participating in something like Bitcoin or an alternative currency like a community hours program or things like that, whether it's purchasing locally through local exchanges, etc. Whatever it is, I hope people are starting to realize that you are the solution, and the solution is not going to come through political means, through lobbying your politicians, because that has been abundantly made clear over the past several years.
James, I think the word you were looking for earlier from JFK was inevitable. So I think to maybe underline some of those points you were making, I'll just run down the list quickly. And to note, as you were just saying, and again, a lot of these come from stratrisks.com, world's major central banks act with new boldness as economies falter. Stockholm riots leave Sweden's dreams of perfect society up in smoke. Fears grow over possible Malaysian spring. Spain's Bankia decimates savers as stocks plummet, where a police officer even stabbed the banker who sold him the bunk shares. I guess that would refer back to the anecdotes out of Spain referring to college graduates, and it gets even worse than that. The last note, James, from NBC News. There is no food. Post-revolutionary economic turmoil dashes hopes in Egypt. So we see that swirling all around everywhere. And that, I think, in a way, can transition us to our third and final story this week. A fascinating one from IO9. Scientists revive 400-year-old frozen plants. Frozen mosses that were buried under glaciers 400 years ago have now been regrown. Surprisingly, the hardy bryophytes required no special techniques to regenerate. That means they might be candidates for colonizing extreme environments, even in space. So there's been substantial glacial retreat, and it's now revealing beautifully preserved vegetative communities, so says Catherine Lafarge, a bryophyte botanist at the University of Alberta. It's kind of like a blanket being pulled back, allowing you to see what the little ice age was like. These guys are really adept in extreme environments, Lafarge says, adding that the research's implications go beyond just little ice age ecosystems. By further studying bryophyte regeneration, scientists can get a better understanding of basic life systems, including, perhaps, how to promote biological development in extraterrestrial environments such as Mars. And James, I will include the link also to pnas.org for this bit of research that I can't help but note the interesting part that says it required no special techniques to regenerate, James.
Well, it's an interesting development, but I'm more interested in the relateds and talking about the follow-up from the March Against Monsanto.
That's true. You're just jumping right to it. I was going to tiptoe around it. James, I think the worldwide marches against Monsanto last Saturday, I think, were a huge success. We will include some interesting videos. CNN, when they finally covered it, and of course there is a pretty big blackout, and it's interesting to note if you go through a lot of the media that did cover the marches, no matter what city it was, all the news stories essentially ended with the same paragraph you know was fed to them by Monsanto. I don't have it here available, but essentially it was Monsanto's side of the story, and you could tell they were just including that in every piece. But CNN, when they finally did their coverage, and they did it Tuesday because it was Memorial Day this past Monday here in the States, the footage they continually show as the B-roll in the background was right here in Portland, Oregon, where we had easily 6,000+ people show up, and it was unbelievable. I got to run the camera for the live stream of the event, which was amazing. At some point, I kind of turned around and was like, holy moly, there are thousands of people behind me. I think it was amazing, and we will also include, James, the video you put up that day, the grassroots uprising in the March Against Monsanto.
Well, that's it. I think that this is an important step towards further thrusting this information into the public consciousness and getting people to realize that they really are part of the solution or they are part of the problem. And we either support these corporations and what they're doing or we don't. But the other related story, especially ominous, talking about some genetically modified wheat that was not actually intended to ever be part of the food supply, has found its way into the food supply there in Oregon, which is a especially disturbing story because, of course, that gets into the food supply not only in the United States but everywhere around the world, including countries like Japan, which specifically don't allow genetically modified foods. Well, if it's not labeled as such, it can get into the food supply here anyway. So they are literally polluting the gene pool, and again, we have to start sourcing our food locally and understanding where it's coming from and who's planting it and what they're planting. It's the only way around this type of corporate control of the food supply.
Yes, James, we will include that link. USDA says unapproved genetically engineered wheat discovered in Oregon field, and I'll also include the Ustream channel where we have all of the speeches from all the folks at the event, and there's a little bit of something, I think, for everyone there. And again, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the amazing work that my amazing girlfriend, Cassie Cohn, did in her new LLC to pull a kind of event like this off called Non-Toxic Media. So, James, I'm really proud to be associated with it in the small way that I could be.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to see that so many people are starting to wake up to this and realizing what needs to be done. So, again, my hat's off to everyone who participated and who helped to spread the word about Monsanto and what it's really up to. So on that note, I think we're going to leave it there for this week.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Take care.
You too.